Okay, good morning everyone, and welcome to CCNA Discovery Networking for Home and Small Business, Module 4 for 2010. Connecting to the Internet through an ISP. Internet service providers are the links to the Internet. The web of interconnected ISPs makes the Internet accessible for everyone. In this chapter, you will learn why ISPs are necessary and about the network operation centers that are crucial to the function of the Internet. After completion of this chapter, you should be able to explain what the Internet is and how we connect to the Internet using an internet service provider, regardless of whether we're using wireless dongles, routers, or modems. Explain how information is sent across the internet through an ISP. Describe and identify the components of an ISP network operation center. Identify the different types of cables, connectors for connecting the devices in an Network Operation Center. Construction and terminate twisted pair cables and determine type of cable needed. The Internet and how we connect to it. Explain what the Internet is. Every day millions of people exchange information through the Internet, like we are at the moment. But what exactly is the Internet? The Internet is a worldwide collection of computer networks cooperating with each other to exchange information using common standards. Through telephone wires, fiber optic cables, wireless transmissions and satellite links. Internet users can exchange information in a variety of forms. The Internet is a network of networks that connect users in every country through the world. There are currently over 1 billion Internet users worldwide and growing rapidly all the time. Up to now, the networks we have discussed have been controlled by one individual or organization. The Internet is a conglomerate of networks and is owned by no one individual or group. There are, however, several major international organizations that help manage the Internet so that everyone uses the same rules. The Internet Society, ISOC, provides leadership and addressing issues that confront the future of the Internet and is the home for the groups responsible for the Internet. Infrastructure standards, including the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF, and the Internet Architecture Board, the IAB. The following are some of the main organizations that help manage and develop the Internet. ISOC, which is the Internet Society. This is the central leadership organization in addressing issues that confront current and future use of the Internet. The ISOC facilitates communication across the organizations, including the IETF, the IANA, and the IAB. IETF, Internet Engineering Task Force. The IETF identifies and proposes solutions to the Internet problems, helps develop protocols, and makes recommendations about the standardisation of protocols. And the IRTF, which is the Internet Research Task Force, this organisation researches the future of the internet and solutions to problems such as spam, security, and safety of information, such as bank accounts and credit cards, and how to handle internet transmissions in times of national disaster or war. And as we know, internet identity theft is becoming one of the worst computer crimes in the world. IANA, or the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, this organisation is the bookkeeper of the internet. It does not assign numbers, but it helps track of to whom they are assigned, and can provide direction for tracking down internet abuse. The website InfoPlease is a good source of internet usage statistics and resources. All these different bodies and things, I'll actually send you all them in an email so that you can research those for yourself. Internet service providers, or an ISP as everybody knows them as, any home, business or organisation that wants to connect to the internet must use an internet service provider. An internet ISP is a company that provides the connections and support to access the internet. It can also provide additional services such as email and web hosting, voice over IP for internet telephony, and many others. ISPs are essential to gaining access to the internet, whether you're using a wireless dongle, modem, or router. No one gets on the internet without a host computer. And no one gets on the internet without going through an ISP. ISPs range in size from small to very large and differ in terms of their area and service. ISPs may provide limited service to a small geographical area, or can have a wide variety of services and support entire countries with millions of customers. ISPs also differ in types of connections, technologies, speeds that they offer. Examples, say in America, for different ISPs are AOL, Earthlink and Roadrunner. Here in Australia, the main ones are Big Pond, TPG, and Internode. As a next exercise this week, I want everybody to research internet service providers in Sri Lanka. And I also want you to research the network operations centres in Sri Lanka as well. The ISP's relationship with the internet, individual computers and local networks connect to the ISP at a point of presence, or POP. A POP is the connection between the ISP's network and the particular geographical region that the POP is servicing. Individual computers and local networks connect to the ISP at the point of presence. A POP is the connection between the ISP and a particular group. I said that. An ISP may have many POPs depending on its size and the area it services. within an ISP, a network of high-speed routers, switches, move data between the various point of presence or POPs. Multiple links interconnect the POPs to provide alternative routes for the data. For the data, should one link fail or become overloaded with traffic and congestion. ISPs connect to other ISPs in order to send information beyond boundaries of their own network. So in that case, if you're sending, say, an email to someone that's on the same service provider, it doesn't leave their network, it just gets sent from there within that network. Whereas if you're sending an email to someone out of that network, their server then forwards that email onwards to the next router. The internet is made up of high-speed data links that interconnect ISP POPs and ISPs to each other. These interconnections are part of the very large, high-capacity network known as the Internet Backbone. Connecting to the ISP at the point of presence or POP provides users with access to the ISP services to the Internet. Options for connecting to the ISP. ISPs provide variety of ways to connect to the Internet depending on location and desired connection speed. And of course, cost is involved there as well. In a major city, there are typically more choices for ISPs and more connection options than in rural areas. Like where we live as an example, we live in a rural area and we have only a few connection types available. For example, cable internet access is only available in certain metropolitan areas where cable TV service is available. There again, because we're in a rural area, we don't have the cable internet access because they won't bring it up here because it's too expensive. Remote areas may only have access via dial-up or satellite. Each internet access technology uses a network access device, such as a modem, in order to connect to the ISP. Or in now a lot of people's case, and a lot of you are using these USB dongles through the wireless technology. It may be built into your computer, or it may be provided by your ISP. Actually, a lot of the new netbooks and some of the laptops have now got 3G wireless built into them now. The simplest arrangement is a modem that provides a direct connection between a computer and the ISP. However, if multiple computers connect through a single ISP connection, you will need additional networking devices. This includes a switch to connect multiple hosts on a local network and a router to move packets from your local network to the ISP. A home networking device such as an integrated router can provide these functions as well as wireless capability in a single package. Any of you using a wireless router?
Earlier in our class we used wireless router.
Okay, so
in my office, I have one.
Oh, good. No, so because you've got more understanding in that. with that topic. So how many PCs are connected to the wireless router?
It is, in fact, in our computer training center, we have about 9 PCs, but all of them are connected with wires. But in addition to that, anybody who wish to connect can bring their laptops and get connected through the wireless point.
Oh, good. Excellent. Options for connecting to the ISP. The choice of internet access technologies depends on availability, cost, access device used, media use, and the speed of the connection. As the Chancellor just illustrated, that with the modern integrated routers, you can either connect via a cable or through a wireless link between the laptop or desktop and the integrated wireless router. Most of the technologies shown are used for both home and small business. Leased lines are typically used for business and large organisations, but can be used to provide high-speed connectivity in areas where cable or DSL are not available. Dial-up modems, the slowest and most widely available service, uses regular voice-grade telephone lines. And dial-up modems are used very, very rarely these days. Cell modem service available through a cell phone service providers. Relatively slow access speeds, but becoming more common. DSL or digital subscriber line service available from most telephone companies provides high-speed digital connections over regular telephone lines. Then a cable modem service is available from most cable companies, provides high-speed services over the cable TV network, but generally only in major capital cities in Australia. I don't know about Sri Lanka though. Then there's the leased line, service available from most telephone companies, provides high-speed connection over dedicated digital data lines. The most common example of a leased line is a T1 or E1. Primarily for a business class service. In some areas or remote areas, satellite service available from internet dish satellite companies provides medium speeds via satellite. Satellite may be the only choice faster than dial-up in some rural areas. It's also very expensive to have installed. ISP levels of service. Depending on the ISP, the connection technology varies. Services are available such as virus scanning, video on demand, and file storage. The contract with the ISP determines the type of level of services that are available. Most ISPs offer two different contract levels, home or business class service. Home service is normally less expensive than business services and generally provides scaled down services such as slower connection speeds, reduced web space storage, and fewer email addresses. A typical home account may include 5 email addresses and additional addresses that are available at a nominal fee, whereas the business class service is more expensive but provides faster connection speeds and additional web space and email accounts. A business class service may include 25 or more email addresses. Business service also includes agreements between the ISP and the customer specifying items such as network availability and service response times. These are known as service level agreements, and that's a really good one to remember. That's important, that service level agreement. The following services that may be offered by an ISP is content filtering. ISPs can provide software that prevents specific material from being downloaded based on the user specifications. This software is often used to block objectionable and/or offensive websites. Video on demand, real-time downloading of movies allows users to watch movies over the internet. This is known as video streaming. Oh, what did everybody think of that YouTube video I sent you about the Google Network Operations Center?
I got that link, but I try to I click that. When I click on that link, it says that my browser is not upgraded, so that cannot be viewed. So I think I have to upgrade the Internet Explorer and see that once again.
What version of Internet Explorer are you using?
It's version 6.
What version of JAWS are you using?
Version 10.
Okay, you can upgrade it to 7. Don't go to 8 because 8's not accessible a great deal with 10. It's only with version 11 that 8's become really accessible.
But if you have
Mozilla
Firefox installed,
okay. Yeah, no, Mozilla Firefox, I think it's 3.6, is that's, I tend to use that more than Internet Explorer.
Okay, I have never used that, that's the thing, okay.
No, give it a try, it's I find it quite good. And I'll talk about a couple of other things with that at the end of the lecture there. And then following on from that is the connection speed. Download speeds can vary from 56 kilobits per second for the old dial-up to 1.5 megabits per second or higher for technologies such as DSL or cable modems. A higher speed connection is recommended for individuals who download a lot of large programs, perform gaming, or run their own servers. Email accounts. ISPs generally provide multiple user email accounts in one account. As we said before, there's an average of 5 email addresses with a standard POP account. The email addresses can be distributed among individuals or used to separate business mail from personal mail. I have several email addresses used for different things. Webmail allows users to access their email from any computer connected to the internet using a web browser. No special dedicated email client is required. Is everybody clear what an email client is?
It is an email provider?
No, an internet client is the software like Outlook Express, Mozilla Thunderbird, or an older one like I still use called Eudora that is the software that allows you to receive your email and view it.
Yes, but actually I don't use those clients. I'm using webmail.
So. Okay, yeah, and everybody's got their own way of, their preferred ways of doing things. I actually have three email clients that I use for each email address.
Thunderbird is also one of such, no?
Yeah, Mozilla Thunderbird, but it's not terribly accessible unless you use the JAWS scripts.
And may I know whether the Windows 7 operating system has included or has bundled with the email client?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's only using Windows Live Mail, but it's not that flash. It's not greatly accessible. For some reason, they dropped Outlook Express out of it for some reason. Okay, we'll move on.
Yes, I know, and it is not in... Okay, go.
No, sorry, say what you were going to say to Shantha.
As I know, the Windows 7 has excluded the Outlook Express. It is not there. It is no more.
No, you're forced to use Mozilla Thunderbird or one of those ones that's compatible with Windows 7. Okay, we'll move on. And then they have the personal home pages. Personal web page space is frequently provided with service. Use both the size of the web space and the traffic generated are limited. Design and maintenance of the website is maintained by the individual author. In our case, we have a family website that we have up, with a lot of cooking recipes and things on it, and family photos and whatnot. Web hosting services. Organizations that do not have web servers can use the ISP service for their website. This often comes with design and maintenance services, also with a cost. Web hosting services are usually purchased based on the size of the website and the anticipated monthly volume. File storage. Organizations can use the ISP's online storage and file management systems to provide 24/7 access to important files. File storage can range from a few megabytes to terabytes of online storage. Online file storage is usually password protected. A lot of people use that SendSpace, which you can have gigabytes and up to terabytes of space if you have one of their SendSpace Max accounts. And then there's voice over IP for internet telephony. ISPs may provide IP telephony services that allow users to make and receive voice calls over the internet. When using the internet, regular long distance tolls do not apply. And it saves a fortune. We have an internet telephone that we use, and it costs us $20 Australian for unlimited local and interstate calls and free calls to 7 different countries. Internet service providers also can offer virus scanning, anti-spam services as part of their connection package. Most ISPs scan for malicious code, both on the files that have been uploaded from the end user and those arriving for delivery to the end user through their email and so on. When data is transferred, it is either uploaded or downloaded. Downloading refers to the information coming from the internet to your computer, while uploading indicates the reverse path from your computer to the internet. When the download transfer rate is different from the upload transfer rate, it is called asymmetrical. When the data transfer rate is in the same in both directions, it is called symmetric. ISPs can offer both asymmetric or symmetric services, but generally these symmetric services are dearer. Asymmetric, most common used for the home. Download speeds are faster than the upload speeds necessary for users that download significantly more than upload. For most internet users, especially those who use graphic or multimedia intensive web data, need lots of download bandwidth. Whereas a symmetric connection, most commonly used for business or individual hosting servers on the internet, used when necessary to upload large amounts of traffic, such as intensive graphics, multimedia, or video. The ISP level of service. Sending information across the internet, importance of the internet IP protocol. For hosts to communicate on the internet, they must be running the internet protocol or IP software. The IP protocol is one of the group of protocols that are collectively referred to as TCP/IP, or Transmission Control Protocol over Internet Protocol. The Internet Protocol IP uses packets to carry data. Wherever you are playing on the internet, video game, chatting with a friend, sending email, or searching the web, for information you are sending or receiving is carried in the form of packets. Each IP packet must contain a valid source and destination IP address. Without valid address information, packets sent will not reach the destination host. Return packets will not make it back to the original source. IP defines the structure of the source and destination IP addresses. It specifies how these addresses are used in routing of packets from one host to network to another. All protocols that operate on the internet, including IP, are defined in numbered standard documents called RFCs or requests for comments. It can carry large amounts of data in both directions at equal rates. RFCs or requests for comments are numbered documents that define protocols and other standards that determine how the internet functions. The higher the number, the newer the RFC. RFCs are submitted to the IETF and go through a review process. As they are reviewed, they go through the following stages. A proposal as the entry level. Then they go through a draft process as the initial testing. Then they go through the final and standard fully adopted. The IETF RFC website, which I'll give you in your email with some other information after class. An IP packet has a header at the beginning which contains the source and destination IP addresses. It also contains control information that describes the packet, the two network devices such as routers it passes through and helps to control its behavior on the network. The IP packet sometimes referred as a datagram. IP addresses must be unique on the internet. There are organizations responsible for controlling the distribution of IP addresses so that there is no duplication. ISPs obtain blocks of IP addresses from a local, national or regional internet registry, RIR for short. It is the responsibility of the ISPs to manage these addresses and assign them to end users. Like most of you with your equipment, you're obtaining your IP address dynamically, which means that every time you connect to the internet through a wireless dongle or a router, the internet service provider assigns the IP addresses for your equipment. Or in some cases, like myself, we have a permanent or static IP address, which never changes. Computers in homes, small business and other organizations obtain their IP address configuration from their ISP. Typically, this configuration is obtained automatically through DHCP when the user connects to the ISP for internet access. ISP handle packets. Before being sent on the internet, messages are divided into packets. IP packet sizes is between 64 to 1,500 bytes for internet networks and contains mostly user data. Downloading a single 1 megabyte song would require over 600 packets of 1,500 bytes. Each individual packet must have a source and destination IP address. When a packet is sent across the internet, the ISP determines whether the packet is destined for a local service located on the ISP network or a remote service located on a different network. So just as an example, if I send a packet to someone that's on internode who is my service provider, it stays within that network. But if it goes out to someone on another service provider, then leaves their network and then transverses through the internet through the different routers. If for some reason your data is not reaching the intended destination, you can use the ping or packet internet groper command line program or trace route. And there also is another one which uses both the output from ping and trace route called path ping to find out if there is a problem somewhere in its travels. Okay, has everybody got those text files open that I sent you for the trace routes that I did the other day?
Mr. Dean, may we discuss those files after lecture?
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah, no, I'll go through those. It's really important that you understand what's happening when you actually go through that process.
And can you tell me the names of those, if you have those names in your mind?
Yeah, no, I'll go through those at the end of lecture with everyone. Following on, then, TCP/IP is popular for three basic reasons. And the first is TCP/IP is hardware and software independent. TCP/IP can run on Intel, AMD, and Macintosh computers, servers, mainframes, and most other major computer systems. It is publicly documented and freely available standards. The availability of standards means that companies developing operating systems, NIC, hardware, mobile computing devices, etc., have easy access to the information they need to incorporate TCP/IP. It has a large and flexible addressing scheme. IPv4 or IP version 4 allowed for approximately 4.5 billion devices to be uniquely identified and connected over the internet, while IPv6 allows for billions more. It would seem that 4.5 billion addresses should last forever, but the latest estimates indicate that these 4.5 billion addresses will run out, at least by 2011. Consider the number of devices just one person might have that requires an address. The Internet Cloud is a conceptual representation of the complex networks that enable the movement of information from origin host to destination host. ISPs connect to small home office users and the other ISPs utilizing multiple technologies with differing service levels. Differentiating these devices and their characteristics and capabilities is crucial in understanding how ISPs serve their customers. In order to ensure the internet operates effectively, ISPs must maintain an operational infrastructure that is safe, secure, and environmentally compatible with the technologies housed therein. Every ISP has a control facility for their network, known as the Network Operations Center, or NOC. The NOC, or Network Operations Center, usually controls traffic flow and houses services such as email and web hosting. The NOC may be located at one of the point of presence POPs or at a completely separate facility within the ISP network. Packets looking for local service are usually forwarded to the NOC and never leave the ISP network. Network operations centres. For example, Curtin University in Western Australia has the third largest network operating centre in Western Australia. ISP's operations need to be monitored as well? What would happen if an ISP customer had trouble connecting or their email was lost or incorrectly routed? The Network Operations Center supports troubleshooting, software distribution, and updating, router and domain name management, performance monitoring, and coordination of associated networks. Not only ISPs have network operation centers. As an exercise this week, I want you to find out what network operation centers are in Sri Lanka. Network operation centers at the University of Maryland, for example, monitors and operates over 1,500 routers, switches, hubs, and manages and allocates IP addresses for all university members, solves network problems, and manages off-campus connectivity for users. I also want you to find out what network operation centers are in other industries, as that Google network operation center was a good example. One example in a real world application is a tracking of the tractor trailer trucks and their cargo. Tractor trailer trucks equipped with GPS and wireless transmitters are tracked the world over by network operation centers, monitoring position, speed, mileage, vehicle maintenance, and cargo. Why is it important to be able to monitor truck positions, and what benefits are there to the trucking company and the driver? Can anybody give me a few suggestions why that might be?
Can you repeat it a bit, Mr. D?
Why would it be important for a trucking company to monitor a truck's GPS position, its position, speed, mileage, and vehicle maintenance and cargo?
For troubleshooting and give assistance?
The last part, right, but troubleshooting not so much. But the main aspects would be increased security, and the estimating of the delivery, the time for the delivery of the goods.
Okay.
Routers in each of the ISP POPs use the destination addresses of the IP packets to choose the best path through the internet. The packets you sent to the ISP POP are forwarded by routers through the ISP network and then through the network of other ISPs. They pass from router to router until they reach their final destination. How ISPs handle packets. Forwarding packets across the internet, they are network utilities that test connectivity to the destination device. The ping utility tests end-to-end connectivity between source and destination. Ping measures the time that it takes test packets to make a round trip from source to destination, whether the transmission is successful. However, if the packet does not reach the destination or if it delays an encounter along the way, there is no way to determine where the problem is located. How is it possible to determine which routers the packets have passed through and detect the problem areas in the path? The traceroute utility traces the route from source to destination. Each router through which packets travel is referred to as a hop. Traceroute displays each hop along the way and the time it takes for each one. If a problem occurs, the display of the time and the route that the packet traveled can help to determine where the packet was lost or delayed. The traceroute utility is called TRACERT in the Windows environment. Some critical concepts and processes that you would need to know. One is host and routing devices must be running the Internet Protocol or IP software for communication to occur on the Internet. IP establishes an addressing scheme that enables routing through local and remote networks. Data moves across the internet in IP packets made up of routing information and data. Network operation centers are the home base for all ISP servers. RFC or request for comment documents set out research, methodology, innovation and information applicable to the internet technologies, ping, traceroute and path ping are utilities that allow network users and administrators to monitor connectivity. Networking devices in a network operations center. When packets travel across the internet, they pass through many network devices. The internet can be thought of as network of routers interconnected with each other. Very often, they are alternative routes between routers, and packets may take different paths between source and destination. Should there be a problem with traffic flow at any point in the network, packets automatically take an alternative route. Interconnections would be very complex in that case. Additionally, the final routing path between source and destination is not usually important, only that the source is able to communicate with the destination. Therefore, in network diagrams, a cloud is often used to represent the internet or any other complex network without showing the details of the connections. The cloud allows the simple diagrams that focus on source and destinations only, even though there are many and there may be many devices linked in between. Devices in the internet cloud. Routers are not the only devices found in the internet cloud, nor are they the only devices found on an ISP. The ISP must be able to accept and deliver information to the end user as well as participate in the internet. Devices that provide connectivity to the end users must match the technology used by the end user to connect to the ISP. For example, if the end user is using DSL technology to connect, the ISP must have a DSL access multiplexer or DSLAM to accept these connections. For cable modems to connect, the ISP must have a cable modem termination system or CMTS. Some ISPs still accept analog calls through modems and have banks of modems to support these users. ISPs that provide wireless access have wireless bridging equipment. The ISP must also be able to connect with and transfer data with other ISPs. A variety of technology are used to accomplish this, each requiring specialized equipment and configurations in order to function. The type of equipment found in an ISP equipment room depends on the technology of the networks in which it is participating. Routers and switches make up most of the equipment, but these devices are very different than the ones found in home or small business environment. Networking devices used by an ISP handle extremely large volumes of traffic very quickly. They must function at near 100% uptime, since the failure of a key piece of equipment at an ISP can have disastrous effects on the network traffic. For this reason, most of the equipment used by ISPs are high-end, high-speed devices with redundancy. What would you expect them to mean by redundancy? Anybody like to have a step? Reliability is the main goal of it, but redundancy means that they will have another identical piece of equipment to step in when that other, if another piece of equipment fails.
Is it kind of a backing up?
It's like a backup of their servers and internet connections. So if one goes down, the other one steps in and takes its place.
Okay.
That's why it's important that they have these network operation centers that monitor all the equipment all the time, and they would have warning systems in place if one of the servers goes down, so they can have someone go in and replace the equipment as needed, as you would have listened to in that network operation center for the Google network. In contrast, network devices used in home or small business environments are lower end, lower speed devices that are not capable of handling large volumes of traffic. Integrated routers can perform several functions, including wireless LAN access point, switching, routing, firewalls, and various other addressing functions. An integrated router may support some or all of these functions. Physical and environmental requirements. This is really important, this part of it. The network installation location at an ISP versus home or small business are very different. The home or small business network provides limited number of services for relatively few users. The internet connectivity is purchased from an ISP. The volume of traffic is small and no transport services are provided. The ISP provides transport and other services to large numbers of users. A number of different devices are required to accept input from end users to participate in transport network. They must be able to connect to other ISPs. They handle large volumes of traffic and require very reliable equipment in order to handle the load. Even though these two networks appear very different, they both require an environment where the equipment can function reliably and without interruption. The requirements are the same, but the scale operation is different. At home, a single power outlet will suffice, whereas an ISP, the power requirements need to be planned out ahead and time and installation. Other major differences between an ISP and a home and small business network is inclusion of servers. Most home users do not run servers, and small businesses usually may have a few. They rely on the services offered by the ISP for such things as email, addressing assignment, and web space. An ISP must consider the physical requirements of not only the networking equipment, but also the servers in it houses. One of the main considerations of electronic equipment is a reliable supply of stable power. Unfortunately, the supply of power is not always reliable, and this can lead to problems for network devices. ISPs install power conditioning equipment with substantial battery backup to maintain continuity of supply should the main power grid fail. For home and small businesses, inexpensive, uninterruptible power supplies, or a UPS, with battery backup units are usually sufficient for the relatively small amount of equipment they use. Environmental factors, such as heat and humidity, must be considered when planning a network installation. However, because of the volume of equipment and the amount of power consumed in an ISP, high-end air conditioning units are necessary to maintain controlled temperatures. As you find in the YouTube video for the Google Network Operations Center with their vast water cooling equipment to help cool and maintain temperature in those containers which have got their servers in, and they've all got battery backups on every single piece of equipment in there. For the home and small business, ordinary air conditioners, heating and humidity controls are usually sufficient. Cable management is another area of concern for both the home and small business network and the ISP. Cables must be protected from physical damage and organized in a manner that they will aid in the troubleshooting process. In small networks, there are only a few cables, but in ISP networks, thousands of cables must be managed. This can include not only the copper data cables, but also fiber optic and power cables. All of these factors, namely power supply, environment, and cable management, must be considered when setting up a network of any size. There is a big variation between size and therefore requirements for an ISP and a home network. Most networks fall somewhere between these two extremes. Cables and connectors, common network cables. In order for communication to occur, a source, destination, and some sort of channel must be present. A channel or medium provides a path over which the information is sent. In the network world, the medium is usually some sort of physical cable. It may also be electromagnetic radiation in the case of wireless networking. The connection between the source and destination may be either direct or indirect, and may span multiple media types. Like in a, if you have a wireless router at home, you might be connecting wirelessly to the router, and then it's via cable, then back to the exchange. Many different types of cables exist to interconnect the various devices in a network operation center or local network. There are two kinds of physical cable. Metal cables, usually copper, have electrical impulses applied to them to convey information. Whereas a fiber optic cable, made of glass or plastic, uses flashes of light to convey information. These connections between source and destination may include different types of cabling or media to transmit. The data leaves the source on a straight-through cable to a switch. The switch forwards the data by another straight-through cable to the boundary router. The connections are copper cabling within the cloud, the internet cloud, that is. The data is usually transmitted via serial copper links, electrical, or fiber optic light. When the data reaches the far side boundary router, it is converted back to an electrical signal and forwarded by a straight-through cable from the router to the switch, and another straight-through cable between the switch and the destination PC. The key point outlined is that several types of cabling media are used between source and destination, and together they represent the channel. Twisted pair cabling. Modern Ethernet technology generally uses a type of copper cable known as a twisted pair or TP to interconnect devices. Because Ethernet is the foundation for most local networks, twisted pair is the most commonly encountered type of network cabling. Coaxial cable is usually constructed of either copper or aluminium and is used by cable television companies to provide service. It is also used for connecting the various components which make up satellite communication systems. Fiber optic cables, they're in a point of difference. are made of glass or plastic. They have very high bandwidth, which enables them to carry very large amounts of data. Fiber is used in backbone networks, large enterprise environments, and large data centers. It is also extensively used by telephone companies. And the specifying cable and connectors. With the twisted pair cable, the twisted pair is one of the most commonly used cable types in networking. Wires are grouped in pairs and twisted together to reduce interference. The pairs of wires are colored so that you can identify the same wire at each end. Typically, in each pair, one of the wires is a solid color and its partner is the same color striped onto a white background. Twisted pair cables consist of one or more pairs of insulated copper wires that are twisted together and housed in a protective jacket. Like all copper cables, twisted pair uses pulses of electricity to transmit the data. Data transmission is sensitive to interference or noise, which can reduce the data rate that a cable can provide. A twisted pair cable is susceptible to electromagnetic interference, or EMI, a type of noise. A source of interference known as crosstalk occurs when cables are bundled together for long lengths. The signal from one cable can leak out and enter adjacent cables. When data transmission is corrupted due to interference, such as crosstalk, the data must be retransmitted. This can degrade the data carrying capacity of the medium. In twisted pair cabling, the number of twists per length affects the amount of resistance that the cable has to interference. That's a really good one to remember because that'll be in your exam for this module. Twisted pair cable suitable for carrying telephone traffic, referred to as CAT3, has 3 to 4 turns per foot, making it less resistance, whereas CAT5 cable has 3 to 4 turns per inch, making it more resistant to interference. There are 3 types of twisted pair cable: unshielded twisted pair, which is the most commonly one used, shielded twisted pair, and screen twisted pair. Unshielded twisted pair, or UTP, is the most commonly encountered type of network cable in North America and in many other countries. Whereas shielded cables, SCTP or FUTP, are used most extensively in European countries. Unshielded twisted pair cable is inexpensive, offers high bandwidth and is easy to install. This type of cable is used to connect workstations, hosts, and network devices. It can come in many different numbers of pairs inside the jacket, but the most common number of pairs is 4, as described in that color coding document I sent on Ethernet cables. Each pair is identified by a specific color code. Many different categories of UTP cables have been developed over time. Each category of cable was developed to support a specific technology and most are no longer encountered in homes or offices. The cable types which are still commonly found include categories of 3, Cat 3, Cat 5, 5E and 6. There are electrical environments in which EMI and RFI are so strong that shielding is required to make communication possible, such as in noisy factories. In this instance, it may be necessary to use a cable that contains shielding, such as shielded twisted pair, or STP, and screened twisted pair, or SCTP. Unfortunately, both STP and SCTP are very expensive, not as flexible, and have additional requirements due to the shielding to make them difficult to work with. All categories of data grade UDP cable are traditionally terminated into an RJ45 connector. Category 3, used for voice communication, most often used for phone services. Category 7 or SCTP cable, used for data transmission. Individual pairs are wrapped in a shield and then the entire 4 pairs are wrapped in another shield, and that cable supports 1000 megabits per second, 10 gigabits per second, through to, though 10 gigabits per second is not recommended. Cat 6 cable, UTP, used for data transmission. An additional separator in between each wire pair of wires, allowing it to function in a higher speeds, supports 1000 megabits per second, 10 gigabits per second, although 10 gigabits per second is not recommended. Category 5 and 5E, used for data transmission. Category 5 supports 100 megabits per second and can support 1000 megabits per second, but not recommended. Category 5E supports 1000 megabits per second. Whereas coaxial cable, like twisted pair, coaxial cable or coax also carries data in the form of electrical signals. It provides improved shielding compared to UTP, so has lower signal-to-noise ratio and can therefore carry more data. It is often used to connect a TV set to a signal source, be it cable TV outlet, satellite TV, or conventional antenna. It is also used at network operation centres to connect to the cable modem termination system, CMTS, and to connect some high-speed interfaces. Although coax has improved data carrying characteristics, twisted pair cabling has replaced coax in local area networking uses. Among the reasons for the replacement is that compared to UTP, coax is physically harder to install, more expensive, and harder to troubleshoot. Fiber optic cable. Unlike twisted pair and coax, fiber optic cables transmit data using pulses of light. Although not normally found in home or small business environments, fiber optic cable is widely used in enterprise environments and large data centers. Fiber optic cable is constructed of either glass or plastic, neither of which conducts electricity. This means that it is immune to EMI and is suitable for installation in environments where interference is a problem. In addition to its resistance to EMI, fiber optic cables support a large amount of bandwidth, making them ideally suited for high-speed data backbones. Fiber optic backbones are found in many corporations and also used to connect ISPs to the internet. Each fiber optic circuit is actually a two fiber cables. One is used to transmit data and the other used to receive data. There are two forms of fiber optic cable. One is multi-mode and the other is single-mode cable. It's important to note multi-mode of the two forms of fiber optic. Multi-mode is the less expensive and more widely used. The light source produces the pulses of light and usually uses LED. It is referred to as multi-mode because there are multiple rays of light, each carrying data being transmitted through the cable simultaneously. Each ray of light takes a separate path through the multi-mode core. Multi-mode fiber optical cables are generally suitable for links up to 2,000 meters. However, improvements in technology are continually improving the distance. Characteristics of multi-mode fiber cable are standard PVC coating. Glass cladding is 125 microns in diameter. And the glass core is between 50 and 62.5 microns in diameter, allows multiple paths for light to travel. Larger core than single mode cable allows greater dispersion and therefore loss of signal. Suitable for long distance applications, but shorter than single mode cable, uses LEDs as the light source. Commonly used with LANs or distance of a few hundred meters within a campus network. Whereas single mode fiber optic cable, single mode fiber optic cables are constructed in such a way that the light can follow only a single path through the fiber. The light source for single mode fiber optic cables is usually an LED laser, which is sufficiently more expensive and intense than ordinary LEDs. Due to the intensity of the LED laser, much higher data rates and longer ranges can be obtained. Single mode fibers can transmit data for approximately 3,000 meters and are used for backbone cabling, including the interconnection of various network operation centers. Again, improvements in technology are continually improving this distance. The characteristics of single mode fiber optic cable are polymetric coating. Glass cladding is 125 microns in diameter. Glass core is 9 microns in diameter. Produces single straight path for light. Small core, less dispersion. Suited for long distances applications uses lasers as the light source. Commonly used for campus backbones for distances of several thousand meters. Working with twisted pair cabling. Cabling standards. Cabling is an integral part of building in any network. When installing cable, it is important to follow cabling standards, which have been developed to ensure data networks operate to agreed levels of performance. You'll find standards are going to go right through, whether it's cabling, protocols, anything to do with networking. Standardization of things has become increasingly important. Cabling standards are a set of specifications for the installation and testing of cables. Standards specify types of cables to use in specific environments, conductor materials, pinouts, wire sizes, shielding, cable lengths, and conductor types and performance limits. There are many different organizations involved in the creation of cabling standards. While some of these organizations have local jurisdiction, many offer standards that are adopted worldwide. With Ethernet used worldwide, it is prudent to investigate using structured cabling as the infrastructure for delivering power. In 1999, the IEEE began developing the standard for delivering power over Ethernet. Today that standard is known as IEEE 802.3 AF 2003. It is used to send 48 volts DC along the Ethernet data on four pairs UDP or SDP cable. Power over Ethernet or PoE allows network engineers to have flexibility in the placement of endpoint devices, such as wireless access points, video cameras, and IP telephones, because there are no need for to have an electrical power outlet near the device. Unshielded twisted pair cables. Twisted pair cable is most commonly used in network installations. The TIA EIA organization defines two different patterns of wiring schemes called the T568A, which we spoke about, and the T568B, which we spoke about. Each wiring scheme defines the pinout in order of wire connections on the end of the cable. The two schemes are similar except of the four pairs of wires are reversed in the termination order. On a network installation, one of the two wiring schemes, either it be T568A or the T568B, should be chosen and followed. It is important that the same wiring scheme is used for every termination in the project. If working on an existing network, use the wiring scheme already employed. Using the T568A and B wiring schemes, two types of cables can be created: a straight through cable or a crossover cable. These two types of cables are found in data installations. A straight-through cable is the most common cable type. It maps a wire at the same pinouts on both ends of the cable. In other words, a T568A on one end of the cable and a T568 on the other end of the cable is a straight through cable. This means that the order of connections, the pinout, for each colour is exactly the same on both ends. Whereas if you had a 568A on one end of the cable and a B on the other, that's a crossover cable. A crossover cable uses both wiring schemes as I just described. This means that the order of the connection on one end of the cable does not match the order of the connections on the other. The straight through and crossover cables each have a specific use on the network. The type of cable needed to connect two devices depends on which wire pairs the devices used to transmit and receive data. Specific pins on the connector are associated with the transmit function and a receive function. The transmit pin versus the receive pin is determined based on the device. Two devices connected and using different pins for transmission to transmit and receive are known as unlike devices. They require a straight through cable to exchange data. In other words, PC to switch port or PC to router port. Devices that are directly connected and use the same pinouts for transmit and receive are known as like devices. They require the use of a crossover cable to exchange data like PC to PC or switch port to switch port or router port to router port uses a crossover cable. Unlike devices, the pins on the RJ45 data connector of a PC have pins 1 and 2 as transmit, and pins 3 and 6 as receive. The pins on the data connector of a switch have pins 1 and 2 as received, and pins 3 and 6 as transmit. The pins used for transmit on the PC correspond to those used for receive on the switch. Therefore, a straight-through cable is necessary. The wire connected to pin 1 transmit pin on the PC on one end of the cable is connected to pin 1 receive pin on the switch on the other end of the cable. Other examples of unlike devices that require a straight through cable are a switch port to router port, hub port to PC. A few examples of like devices that require a crossover cable are switch port, to hub port, hub port to hub port, and router port to router port, and so on. If the correct cable type is used, the connection between network devices will not function. Some devices can automatically sense which pins are used for transmit and receive and will adjust their internal connections accordingly. Most modern routers will actually do that. And UTP cable termination. UTP and STP cable is usually terminated into an RJ45 connector. The RJ45 connector is considered a male component, which is crimped into the end of the cable. When a male connector is viewed from the front with the metal connectors facing up, the pin locations are numbered from 8 on the left to 1 on the right. The jack is considered the female component and is located in networking devices wall outlets or patch panels. The RJ45 connector on the wire plugs into the jack. Cables can be purchased that are pre-terminated with RJ45 connectors. They can also be manually terminated on site using a crimping tool. When manually terminating UTP cable into the RJ45 connector, untwist only the amount of wire to minimize crosstalk. Also, be sure that the wires are pushed all the way into the end of the connector and that the RJ45 connector is crimped onto the wire jacket. This ensures good electrical contact and provides strength to the wire connection. Terminating UTP at patch panels and wall jacks. In a network operations center, network devices are usually connected to patch panels. Patch panels act like switchboards that connect workstation cables to other devices. The use of patch panels enables the physical cabling of the network to be quickly rearranged as equipment is added or replaced. These patch panels use RJ45 jacks for quick reconnection on the front, but require the cables to be punched down on the reverse side of the RJ45 jack. Patch panels are no longer confined to enterprise network installations. They can be found in many small businesses and even homes where they provide central connection point for data, telephone, and even audio systems. We have patch panels here because I ran network cabling right through the house. The RJ45 jack has 8 conductors and is wide according to the T568A or B standards. At the patch panel, a device known as a punch down tool is required to push the wires into the connector. The wires should be matched up to their appropriate insulation displacement connector, or IDC, by colour before punching them down. The punch down tool also cuts off the excess wire. A punch down tool is not required to terminate most wall jacks. To terminate these connectors, the cables are untwisted and replaced and placed into the appropriate IDC. Placing the cap on the jack pushes the cables into the IDC and cuts through the insulation on the wires. Most of these connectors then require the installer to manually trim away the excess cable. In all cases, untwisting more cable than is necessary will increase the amount of crosstalk and degrade overall network performance. Cable testing. When a new or repaired cable is terminated, it is important to verify that the cable operates correctly and meets connectivity standards. This can be done through a series of tests. The first test is a visual inspection, which verifies that the wires are connected according to their T568A or B standard. In addition to visual inspection, check the cable electrically in order to determine problems or flaws in a network cabling installation. The following are tools that can be used for diagnostics. There's cable testers, cable certifiers, and multimeters. You can actually get a talking multimeter meter now, which I must invest in. Cable testers. Cable testers are used to test cables for varying wire faults, such as a wire accidentally mapping to the wrong pins, shorts, or opens within the cable. A cable certifier. A cable certified tester determines the precise performance of the cable and then records it in a graphical form for the customer records. Whereas a multimeter measures AC or DC voltage, electrical current and or cable and electrical characteristics. The cable tester is used to perform initial diagnostics. The first test is usually called a continuity test that verifies that there is end-to-end connectivity, like you do with any electrical circuit. It can also detect common cabling faults, such as opens or shorts. An open circuit occurs when the wire is not properly pushed into the connector and there is no electrical contact. An open can also occur if there is a break in the wire. A short occurs when the copper conductors touch each other. As the electrical pulse travels down the wire, it will cross onto the touching wires. This creates an unintended path in the flow of the electrical signal to its destination. A cable tester can also create wire maps that will verify that the cable is terminated correctly. A wire map shows which pairs connect to which pins on the plugs and sockets. The wire map tests and verifies that all 8 wires are connected to the correct pins and indicates if cabling faults are present, such as split pairs or reversals. If any of these faults are detected, the easiest way to correct them is to re-terminate the cable. Various wiring faults include reverse pairs, split pairs, open and short, and gives a brief description of each. A reverse pair fault occurs when a wire pair is correctly installed in one connector but reversed on the other end of the connector. For example, if one white-green wire is terminated to pin 1 and the green wire is terminated to pin 2 at the other end of the cable but reversed at the other end, then the cable is a reversed pair fault. Split pair fault occurs when the one wire from one pair is switched from one wire from a pair at the other end. Look carefully at the pins, which is a bit hard in our case, in the graphic that takes away from. A split pair creates 2 transmit and receive pairs, each with 2 wires that are not twisted together. The mixing hampers the cross cancellation process and makes the cable more susceptible to crosstalk and interference. An open fault, an error in wiring that is caused by a break in the continuity of the circuit. Whereas a short occurs when the copper portions of wires touch each other. Specialized cable testers provide additional information such as the level of attenuation or crosstalk. Attenuation, also commonly referred to as insertion loss, is a general term that refers to the reduction in the strength of the signal. Like on most integrated routers, in part of the diagnostics, you'll actually be able to see the SNR, like signal to noise ratio and attenuation levels. The further you are from the exchange, and depending on the quality of your telephone line, will vary with those levels. Crosstalk is the leakage of signals between pairs. If this is measured near the transmitting end, it is termed near-end crosstalk or next. If measured at the receiving end of the cable, it is termed far-end crosstalk or fixed. Both forms of crosstalk degrade network performance and are often caused by untwisting too much cable when terminating. If high crosstalk values are detected, the best thing to do is check the cable terminations and re-terminate as necessary. Cabling best practices. The following steps, called best practices, ensure that cable termination is successful. The first is, it is important that the type of cables and components used on a network adhere to the standards required for the network. Modern converged networks carry voice, video, data traffic on the same wires. Therefore, the cables used on converged networks must be able to support all of these applications. Cable standards specify maximum lengths for different types of cables. Always adhere to the length restrictions for the type of cable being installed. As an example, a standard UDP Cat5 cable has a maximum length of 100 meters. UTP, like all copper cable, is susceptible to EMI, or electromagnetic interference. It is important to install cable away from sources of interference, such as high voltage cables and fluorescent lighting. Televisions, computer monitors, and microwaves are other possible sources of interference. In some environments, it may be necessary to install data cables in conduit to protect them from EMI or RFI, or in our case, we had mice chewing our network cables in the roof, which had to be replaced, which is a damn nuisance. Improper termination and the use of low quality cables and connectors can degrade the signal carrying capacity of the cable. Always follow the rules for cable termination and test to verify the termination has been done properly. Test all cable installations to ensure proper connectivity and operation. Label all cables as they are installed and record the location of the cables in network documentation. Documentation is really important to do with networking. For if you're in charge of a network and you decide to leave and someone takes your place, and then without that documentation, they wouldn't know what was meant to go where, or wiring schemes and IP addressing or anything like that. So documentation is extremely important. Cable management services and multiple services. First, it presents a neat and organized system which aids in the isolation of cabling problems. Second, by following cable management practices, the cables are protected from physical damage, which greatly reduces the number of problems experienced. Cables should be considered as long-term investments. What may be sufficient now may not be sufficient in the near future. Always plan for the future by complying with the current standards. Remember that the standards help to ensure that the cables will be able to deliver acceptable performance as technology evolves. It is important to observe cabling best practices in all environments. Strict adherence to these practices in home and business environments helps reduce the number of potential problems. It will save a great amount of time, money and frustration. So in summary, this chapter described the internet as a worldwide collection of computer networks, cooperating with each other to exchange information using common standards. In order to access the internet, you must go through an ISP. An ISP is a company that provides the connections and support to access the internet. ISP supports small to large geographical areas. ISPs provide services such as email, web pages, IP telephony, and domain name resolution through DNS. Individual computers and local networks connect to the ISP at a point of presence or POP. Connection to the ISP can be done using a dial-up, modem, DSL, cable, wireless or satellite. The most important protocol of the internet is the IP protocol. The internet protocol formats data into packets that are from 64 to 1500 bytes in length, and they must contain a valid source and destination address. IP addresses must be unique on the internet. Just imagine if we all had the same address, nothing could get anywhere. Every ISP has a control facility for their network, known as a Network Operation Center or NOC, that usually controls traffic flow and houses services such as email and web hosting. Ping, traceroute and path ping are utilities that test connectivity to a destination device. On network diagrams, a cloud is often used to represent the internet without showing the details of the connections. In the internet cloud, routers are used to provide alternative paths from source to destination. ISPs must be able to accept and deliver information to end users and other ISPs using a variety of technologies. Networking devices used in ISPs are high-end devices with redundancy. An ISP must consider the physical requirements of the networking equipment and the servers in houses, such as power and air conditioning. For communication to occur, a channel must be present to carry the signals. In the networking world, the medium is usually a physical cable. Network cables are grouped into two categories: copper cables that carry electrical signals and fiber optic cables that carry light waves. Copper wire, such as UTP and coaxial cable is extremely vulnerable to both electromagnetic interference, or EMI, and radio frequency interference, RFI. Fiber optic cable is made of glass and plastic, or plastic, and is immune to both EMI and RFI. Unshielded twisted pair, or UTP cable, is the most used on the Ethernet network. Coaxial cable, used frequently for cable TV and internet, has an extremely large bandwidth capacity that allows many signals to be combined or multiplexed. For optic cable, can provide a tremendous amount of bandwidth and is suitable for use as a backbone cable. Cabling standards are guidelines for the installation and testing of cables to ensure acceptable performance as technology evolves. TIA or EIA, twisted pair termination standards, such as the T568A or B. Different types of cables have different wiring schemes. Common UTP cables are straight through, crossover, and rollover. Cable testers check for continuity, open terminations, shorts, split pairs, and reverse pairs. A cable meter tests for attenuation and crosstalk. Cabling best practices help to reduce number of cable errors and problems that can be encountered, and can save a great amount of time, money, and frustration.